getting you home quicker. This is 105 Drive with Julian Clover on Cambridge 105.
27 minutes now before 6 o'clock. Good evening to you. 105 Drive with Julian Fu until 7 tonight. Shopping locally is a topic which often comes up on Cambridge 105, and I'm pleased to welcome to the studio this afternoon Caroline Biggs and Gavin Heumann. This is with regard to something called Cam Shop Local. I'm going to start with Caroline, actually. Hello.
Hello.
How did this all start? Because we've just come out of Eat Cambridge, which you were involved in.
Yes.
And just an innocent little Twitter, as I understand it.
Yes, I happened to read an article in the Financial Times, and I tweeted a quote from that, which was about how good people feel when they shop local. And that was just picked up by a couple of people and started a conversation. And from that, it's sort of gone, well, almost viral, actually.
And this is like racing its way across Cambridge to... Or has it even stretched beyond that, perhaps?
Well, we've had people tweeting us from Edinburgh and also from Hitchin, wanting to get involved in their towns, wanting to have good ideas. So it's really taking off.
So are you sort of planning sort of like a particular sort of a week of doing this, or how is it going to work?
We're going to make it easy for people. We're going to give them 1 week to think about shopping local and use their independent shops on the high streets and not trying very hard, though it's not prescriptive, to go to supermarkets.
Oh, it could be a bit challenging. Gavin, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Well, what are you trying to achieve here? What's sort of the end purpose, if you like?
I think it's really a question of getting people to rediscover the high street. I'm fairly new to Cambridge myself. I was on Twitter on the Tuesday last week and was involved in the conversation. And it was just interesting to see what people were tweeting about. And I'm fully aware of sort of Eat Cambridge and how successful that was. And with the flow of the conversation, I just commented about wouldn't it be good to see whether we could go for a whole week without shopping at the big supermarket. And like Caroline said, it's just gone crazy, really, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
It's been great how local people have taken it on board themselves and want to get involved. And I think it's quite a challenge when you actually start thinking about it to actually go down your local high street and support it. I think we all quite often food shop locally, but it's also your other consumable products you've got to think about as well.
Yeah, this is the challenge here.
Absolutely.
Isn't it, I suppose?
Yes.
And it's also not maybe putting off a purchase just because you're trying to keep all that shopping to the local area.
One of the ladies who was involved, who was tweeting quite early on, said, "Oh, well and good doing food shopping," she said, "but where do I buy my nappies from?" And it's quite a good lead-in. So where do you buy nappies from?
No, go back to the old-fashioned Terry ones and then wash them.
We have sourced somebody, didn't we?
Yes, there is actually a group who do that. They will come to your home and take away the soiled nappies and return some nice fresh ones.
Nicely cleaned and ironed as well, perhaps.
Yes, so
and they deliver them on a bike.
We can rediscover these people, yeah.
And that's quite an interesting one, because I guess the major challenge here is working through the list of what you might need. It's relatively straightforward if something goes wrong. I don't know, I needed to replace the flush mechanism on my loo the other week, so that was fairly straightforward. I use a local plumber anyway, out he comes, sorts that.
Yeah.
But it's the sort of the larger items which you have to draw the line somewhere, don't you, I guess, in terms of, you know, if somebody needed... Oh, I don't know, a new cooker, for the sake of argument. You probably really want to go to one of the multiples to do that, wouldn't you? Or would you?
No, I think there's a number of independent electrical retailers out there. And if anything, some of them are better priced than...
How do you define independent? I guess that's kind of the question really here, isn't it? Because it's fairly straightforward. If there's one shop and it's for the sake of argument on the Mill Road, that's fairly straightforward.
Yeah.
But if it's a larger chain, I'm thinking, well, Hughes Electrical, that's probably a good example. We've just mentioned the... I don't know, I'm entirely sure they sell cookers, but you know what I mean. it's, you know, they have, I don't know, branches across East Anglia, but they're not a national chain by any stretch of the imagination.
I think we were discussing this the other day. There aren't any real rules to the challenge, and I would say I would class them as an independent retailer. I'd much rather go and support them than some of the bigger brands. don't know what Caroline
also
thinks.
Also quite keen for people, if they have that kind of problem, to actually say they've got that problem and actually see if people can actually help them solve that problem. There may be a shop we don't know about.
So perhaps to get people involved, because I guess there's a lot of stores which, I'd say they get too much publicity, because a local independent store can never have too much publicity, but there's some which maybe get mentioned more than others, and there might be somebody tucked away in a side street somewhere, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yes, so I think it's to open a debate, really.
And how are you going to encourage people to get this conversation? You've got there's a Twitter hashtag, isn't there,
which is around? Yes, there's a Twitter hashtag, which is Cam Shop Local. There's a Facebook page now, which is Cambridge Shop Local.
OK.
So people can enter into the debate.
And this is quite...
And feedback their findings.
Yeah. What about the expense, though? Because this is what worries me, is that you might end up, spending considerably more, because, not unreasonably, these stores can't necessarily get the bulk discounts that a supermarket might be able to.
That could well be a myth we've
absolutely
discovered.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, because you've got to, first of all, if you're going to a large supermarket, you've got to get there usually in a car. And some things in the supermarket are cheaper, but not everything. So I think it's a myth it's always going to be more expensive to shop in a supermarket.
And I also think if you're going to the out-of-town shopping centres, although, say, your weekly shop is £50 and you then shop locally and it might be £55, when you go to the large supermarket, you don't necessarily factor in the cost of your petrol, your time driving there, your time parking there, your additional cost for your car insurance, your tax. So there's the hidden cost, not just the cost coming
out.
But
if you're constantly popping in and out of shops and maybe having to go from one side of Cambridge to another.
I think it's trying to also, from my point of view, like, I'm not a foodie. I'm just an estate agent down the road that got involved with this. And when I was talking to all the other members of staff at Fine & Country, we've got sort of 15-odd members of staff there. And even the other day when we were talking, where do we get our morning coffee from? And it's great now that we're hot numbers just down the road. We've found out that they're open at 7:30 in the morning. So we're going to be popping in there and grabbing our coffees. And it's just things like that where you think it's opening that debate within the office even.
Very well done, by the way, for just slipping in the name of your estate agent.
No, I didn't
there.
Mean I that. It was just that. I'm just trying to sort of put across that I'm not a foodie. No, it wasn't intended. I'm not a foodie person. And it was, like I said, from my point of view, I'm looking forward to the challenges of discovering these local shops and really getting out there. I don't think you can beat going into a local shop and chatting to somebody.
On the using your expertise, actually, as an estate agent, we all know about the Mill Road. That's a very prominent area in Cambridge where there is a selection of local, mostly independent shops, and boy, do we know about the ones which aren't independent. But are there other areas of Cambridge where there's these little clusters of local shops where you could do a reasonably good job in, you know, going along and getting a whole load of things for the bit for the pantry or for anything else you might need?
To me, this is what this challenge is all about. It's about getting people to come to us and tell other people about it. There's a gentleman the other day that was tweeting, he doesn't know where there is a greengrocer in Ely, and he's found one, hasn't he? He's about 3 miles out from Ely. I didn't know about it. And I think that's, to me, that's what this is about. It's encouraging debate, and it's encouraging people to go out and discover these little gems of shops. And even if at the end of it, it's only for a week, and even if after that week you go and carry on shopping at the supermarket, if just during... From there on, you go once a week to the local bread shop or the local deli. I think it's worked.
And I guess also, if people need a guide, there's Anne Prince's little book, isn't there, on independent Cambridge, which
Absolutely,
could be
yes.
quite useful to thumb through and get a few ideas of stores you can go to. Stuart somehow has to come in and ask a question here. We've run out of the microphones, as always.
Well, it was more of a recommendation, really, along the lines of places to recommend. I only noticed because I was getting a taxi ride home a few days ago, and I was going up to the going past the farm shop at the top of the Gogmagog Hills.
Oh, yes.
And they very cleverly jumped on the back of the
horse meat.
Exactly, the horse meat. They've got a sign outside that says sausages and burgers, no horsing around.
Yeah.
Oh, very good. Yeah, that's one of my favourite signs. I should tell you about, mention another one a little later on, which I've spotted recently.
But there are so many other good reasons to shop local. I mean, it is good for the local economy if you shop local. Now, more money actually is recycled into the local community if you're spending locally. Because the shopkeepers are usually employing local people, you know, their suppliers are local people. So it's a win-win situation, really.
And I guess that's the kind of thing we see that there's the farm shop as well, isn't there, on the crossroads between Hills Road and Regent Street as well, which
yes.
is like another place which you have in town where people could go to and get locally
and
sourced goods.
And Newnham has quite a cluster of local shops, as does Chesterton Road. And also part in Arbury, there's a very good butcher. I don't know the name, but there is a good butcher.
I'm trying to think. There's one which is called John West. I don't know if that's the one, which I always think is should be a fishmonger's rather than a butcher's. But I don't know if that's the one there. I know Alan, I think, has featured on Flavour a couple of times.
I think one of the stats that surprised me, which we discussed yesterday, was that for every pound spent locally, 70p comes back into the local economy.
Really? That's really quite an interesting... That's an interesting... Yeah. It's like like a Tesco figure, isn't there,
yes,
nationally?
One of the sites that I saw, it's for every pound you spend at a supermarket, the supermarket keeps 62p.
Yeah.
So
no,
that's quite a different statistic.
That's a bit of an interesting
absolutely,
one.
Absolutely, yeah. It really did surprise me when I found that out.
Okay. Well, look, thank you both for coming in. I'm very much looking forward to this dialogue, which is clearly going to happen on on Facebook and on Twitter, and discovering a few more local stores that, certainly I'm not aware of, and hopefully everybody listening as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. We should come back in afterwards.
To have fun doing it. I mean, it is about having fun and discovering what's local. I'm sure people will discover some local food, because I am a foodie, will discover some local food that would taste delicious.
And the week starts when, just to be clear?
Tuesday, the 2nd of April.
Okay, so next Tuesday, and remind people of the Twitter and the Facebook one more time.
It's hashtag CamShopLocal on Twitter, and it's CambridgeShopLocal on Facebook.
Okay, Gavin, Caroline, both of you, thank you very much,
for
coming in. Get shopping, everyone. It's 5:30, Cambridge 105, and it's time to welcome my guest, who's Anna Lindsay. And Anna is the chair and events coordinator of PAC, that's the Petersfield Area Community Trust, which aims to foster the community spirit in the Petersfield area of Cambridge, the very area from which we're speaking to you now. Good evening, Anna. Thanks for coming in.
Good evening, Julian. Thanks for having me in.
Absolute pleasure. So where is Petersfield in terms of a geographical area? Where does it sort of, where are the boundaries?
Well, Petersfield itself, from which the area takes its name, is that sort of field. That sort of grassy area near Parkside Pool.
And that's like, obviously, there's Zionist Church or Jimmy's Night Shelter
there,
right, isn't
it? That's right,
but
Petersfield area stretches, in essence, really from Mill Road, Railway Line, Coldham's Lane, Newmarket Road, East Road. I sort of tend to think that's is not quite that, but that's,
yeah,
no, that's
that,
pretty
that,
much
that,
the
regard
area
that as
covered,
sort of
yes.
Your manor, as it,
yes,
as it were.
That's exactly.
So tell me a little bit more about PACT. You organised a summer event, of course, we'll come on and
we
talk
do,
about
yes.
in a minute, but what else do you get up to?
Various things. I mean, we were set up about 14 years ago to fight the loss of our community centre, which was the Howard Mallett Centre. And we've since become a rather sort of umbrella organisation. So we've given birth to a number of other charities, which are, you know, charities in their own right in the meantime, Friends of Mill Road Cemetery, Streets for People, active ageing groups, various things like that. So we're still involved with planning issues. We sort of look at planning.
So you enter the planning arena, but you're not, say, like a residents' association, of which I guess there's you probably have several, which are all part along in Petersfield.
I've never really thought of it that way, but I suppose you could call us a glorified residents' association. Basically,
you have residents from, I guess, from across the district, really,
yes,
can't you?
Yes, that's right. And it's not just residents, but people who work here, who study here, who have any connection to the area. We welcome them on board. So, yes, one of the focuses of PACT are local planning issues. You've seen some of the...
I was going to say, because there is one which has come up recently, the redevelopment of the Mill Road Store Yard, for example.
That's
which
right,
I think
Mill
is
Road Depot.
Getting a lot of people a bit hot under the collar. More
as
houses,
well,
surprise, surprise.
As well it should do. I mean, the proposal which PACT supports, which seems the best, is one to make a housing cooperative over there, which would ensure that the houses were built by local people, for local people. It would ensure an adequate provision of green space and community facilities, rather than sort of shoehorning in. I think they're proposing to put in 167 houses, which is just vastly.
So you're not against, you're not one of these groups which says, oh no, we don't want any new development. You're happy to see development,
if
as
it's
happy
done,
as you can be.
Yes, so long as it's not overdeveloped. And one of the problems is the recent developments have seen this vastly over-concentrated. I mean, by law, developers are supposed to include a certain amount of green space. A certain amount of space, full stop. On top of which they're supposed to pay the community something called a Section 106 monies, which goes towards providing facilities for the community, sort of infrastructure, etc. The proof that it's been overdevelopment in this area is the fact that recent developments, they haven't even put in the legal amount of space. They've been basically paying off the city council with lump sums in lieu of the space that they are
legally
supposed to apply.
I see. So it's not that they're not exactly. I've very nearly used the term bribe there, and I don't want to accuse
of you
go that far. But
yes.
Clearly, what's happening then, as they are saying, or at some point, I'm just wondering.
We need the development. Please turn a blind eye, and here's some money. You know,
because you
in
can
the
use this
it.
Money to develop
that's
this
right.
with, and
yes.
then it's not my problem
yes.
anymore. I guess that's what's happening.
You know, to myself and to others, that seems a very clear indication that they're overdeveloping.
Yeah, because with the depot, there's also this issue, I think, of traffic as well as the direction,
yes.
because the streets, York Street, Sturton Street, and the area along there, it's not the sort of
that's right. They were
area at the moment.
Closing off access from Mill Road and siphoning everything, decanting everything into these tiny little capillary streets behind, which again is just ludicrous. So yes, it is something which has, I suppose, woken up people from, you know, there's been this tendency to think, oh, well, there's nothing I can do. And people have realised we have to do something, because otherwise we're going to see even worse carbuncles than the ones that are already appearing. I mean, yes, don't get me started.
Oh, yeah,
I'm here to talk about the summer event, not about planning issues, okay. Otherwise I'm going to get very hot and bothered on the corner.
Oh, dear, well, we do get hot and bothered during the summer event, really, particularly after the weather of the recent days.
Well, and last year's summer event basically got arctic'd out. You know, it was bitterly cold weather, so we're praying that this year, given this horrible winter that we've had, is actually going to be decent weather for the summer
absolutely.
Event.
Have you got some dates which we can all put in the diary
Saturday,
now for that?
Saturday the 22nd of June is the day of the event itself, and the two weekends preceding the summer event, we're going to be doing carnival costume workshops for anybody to come along, young and old.
Oh, that sounds rather fun. Where are you going to be holding those?
They're going to be held on Norfolk Street in the Man on the Moon, in the back room. And we're really excited about it because, of course, we're closing off the summer event with a parade. And there'll be a prize for the best individual or group costumes.
And so the groups can come along on one of those
exactly.
weekends to make their
or
costume.
Both
and
both.
Will there be people on hand to
yes,
give
absolutely.
Them some help and advice
right,
and stuff?
Yes.
People aren't. You know, I have trouble sewing on a button, you know, so sort of a full costume might be a bit challenging.
You know, sewing, gluing, whatever it takes to actually make the costumes, and they can be as fantastical as people want.
And for the avoidance of doubt, I can actually sew on a button. The trouble is it either looks messy or looks neat and then comes off 48 hours later, which is not particularly useful. That's
probably not, no.
Not good. Okay, so because the summer event at one time used to be during the week, I think.
That's right. It traditionally was on a Thursday evening, and we felt that it needed to be sort of slightly bigger, and that meant shifting it to the weekend, which was a Saturday. And so it's now on the third Saturday of June rather than on the third Thursday of June. And as I said, it's going to be from noon till 5 o'clock.
And you've got the permission in to close the street, which is normally quite important
yes.
with these things. I know with the Mill Road Winter Fair, for example, it's lovely being able to walk down the middle of the road and ignore the traffic lights and everything.
That's right. So it just means that people are freer to wander and thing. And there's going to be so much going on at the summer event. It's really quite exciting.
What else are you planning, other than the costume?
Ooh, what else are we planning? Well, we've got lots of local sort of groups involved. So everybody from Kinner's Coaching and Elite Sports to DJ Sasha to a samba band. This year, for the first time, we've got craft stalls, but with a twist. You can only have a craft stall if you've got an interactive element. So
an interactive element.
That's so right. So you can go along
doing
and
the crafts
that's
as
right.
Well.
You
okay.
can learn to do something there as well. There are. Oh, what else is there? There's some Squeaky Gate is a community are going to be putting on performance. Chips is putting on a performance. We've got the Cambridge Community Circus is going to be doing workshops.
Circus. I had a friend who ran away to the circus.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really.
Get him to come along to the summer event.
Might
Show
do.
Us what he's learnt. We've got the Chinese, the Cambridge Chinese community putting on the lion dance.
Oh, fantastic. So this is the one they traditionally do at the New Year, isn't it, I think?
That's right, yes.
So, and isn't there something where only one half of the dragon can do the dance outside of the New Year? Or have you got a special dispensation on that?
I'm not aware of that bit of it, but...
I learned that from Blue Peter. John
oh,
Pete
really?
And Val taught me everything I know.
Kudos to them.
Absolutely.
That I haven't come across. As far as I'm aware, it's a lion dance
okay,
of whatever
no,
description.
I'm sure it'll be good.
But it should be really good.
And are you able to get the businesses involved in
yes.
As well?
I mean, last year we were supported by over 150 local businesses, and I'm expecting something similar this year. I mean, already, for example, we had a competition to design the poster for the summer event.
Oh, wow.
Which has been won by somebody called Lily Bracey with an absolutely wonderful design.
So we'll be seeing those all around the area.
We will be seeing that all around the area. And Tyndall's Art Supplies provided the prize for that.
Oh, fantastic.
And we've got a photo, the Cambridge News is coming along to take a photograph of the winner tomorrow, in fact. So look out in your newspapers for a photograph of the winning. And, you know, because the voting was open to everybody... We had a fantastic response, you know, people voting for their favourite design. And in fact, the next three poster designs tied.
Oh, wow. So
that was how close the voting
that's
was.
That's really, really good. So we'll start to see those go up, I guess, over the next few weeks,
yes.
Won't we? I forget
so
them
the winning
off.
One will be printed and displayed, but all the others will be, which were shortlisted will also be displayed probably in the Box Cafe on Norfolk Street.
Oh, that's
Street.
Nice. So Ozzy and the crew there will,
right.
will show them off to people. Okay, so I guess people might have their appetites well and truly whetted for all of this. Where's the, I guess, the contact point, website or whatever to get in touch?
Well, the website, the PACT website, is very simple, www.pactcambridge.org. PACT is spelt P-A-C-T. It's an acronym for Petersfield Area Community Trust. You can also find us on Facebook, and there are contact details on that, so people can get in touch. And as I said, I've talked about some of the things going on, but there's lots more going on. There's local musicians coming along. Nick Ellis is going to be performing.
Yes, I've interviewed Nick. That's an experience.
I can imagine. Great raconteur. And,
he let me get a few questions in from time to time.
So. Oh, I think you were probably very honoured.
It's quite generous.
And we've got St Matthew's Primary School getting involved and all sorts of things like that.
So. Oh, that's good. And the date again when the big event
Saturday,
happens?
Saturday, 22nd of June. So put it in your diaries don't double book.
I'll mark it down. The treble booking is normally my speciality. Well, that's really good. Anna, thank you very much indeed to coming into Drive.
I mean, just to give you an idea, last year somebody came along and did a review for Local Secrets. I mean, we had no idea they were coming along. And they said... This is the community. This is what a community event is about. You know, that the same weekend they had the fair, the Midsummer Fair on, and he said that's not a community event. This is what a community event is. It's everybody coming together. It's showcasing and celebrating the best the area's got to offer: food, music, art. We've got artists having a display as well, of course. You know, activities.
Absolutely, the beauty of the combination of the Jubilee last year in particular is all these flags sort of flying around the place, and it made you feel like you're living in the 1930s, you know, when the community spirit was probably at its height. And
yes.
It can be again in June
as
well.
It can be again in June, that's right. And, you know, if people want to get involved, go onto the website, and there's details there of the regular meetings that we have to plan this summer event. There's a separate group to plan the carnival costumes, a separate group for the artists, you know, whatever you feel sort of keen to participate in, get involved. And of course, we have a fantastic tombola and charity auction, so if you want to, you know, contribute a prize to that, that's brilliant as well.
Anna, thanks again, and do come back just before the event. You can tell us a little bit more about what's happening on that.
Would love to.
28 minutes before 6 o'clock, and that means time to welcome my guest, who is Roger Crabtree. And Roger is Secretary of the Federation of the Cambridge Residents Associations. Evening, Roger. Thanks very much for coming in. So tell me a little bit about the association and what actually you do, because presumably your members are those made up of residents associations, but what do you do for them?
Well, we've been going about 10 years now, I suppose. We basically try to communicate and coordinate between resident associations. What we don't do is actually try and represent residents. I mean, partly because I think that's the councillor's duty, but also because early experience told us that on any given topic, there are as many views as there possibly could be among Cambridge residents, so to actually put forward one view offended others.
There's not so much town and gown, but worse than that, isn't
Absolutely, absolutely. We've got so many people in Cambridge who are articulate and intelligent, but also have a wide range of perspectives, if you like.
Yes, I guess that can complicate things. And I guess also, in many ways, the residents' associations, if too far, would feel, well, hang on a moment, they're trying to take over and do our job for us.
Absolutely. We've had a number saying they wouldn't actually want to be involved if we actually try and spoke on behalf of residents. Mm.
But I guess what you can do is perhaps coordinate between them all, so if similar issues are coming up on opposite sides of our city, then you can maybe a united front, as it were, to present to the appropriate people.
Yeah. We've got about 90 organisations who belong to us. I mean, that sounds very grand because we're five or six guys on a committee, purely voluntary, meet occasionally, communicate by email. So we're not an organisation. We don't charge subs. We just do what we can. But we're in good touch with the city council, particularly the planning department, because a lot of residents' issues are about planning issues.
Oh, I'm sure they are, because we were talking about this the other day, just in this particular area, Petersfield, Cambridge. Yeah, there's all sorts of things which are just, you know, almost like creeping up on us. You know, you look around, all of a sudden what was a partially dilapidated house is suddenly a block of six flats.
Absolutely. Well, you take the area I live in, which is on Rustat Road, just behind the station and behind the leisure centre. We reckon that over the last 12 years, if you include everything that's approved, not yet built, we will have had as many new dwellings as the whole size of Camborne.
And that's quite interesting in itself, because it's Camborne gets all the publicity, if you like. There's this new area in Camborne. Right. How are we going to resource that? I think we had an item on the news the other day about schooling for kids in that area. But actually, those same issues, I guess, are facing us right here in the centre of Cambridge as well.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, most people would agree that one of the big problems we have with our fantastic success as a city is that the infrastructure is sort of lagging behind. And if I take the particular area around half a mile radius of, say, Hills Road Bridge, all this development has and is taking place. There's been very little investment in infrastructure. The junctions over the bridge are getting worse and worse and worse because of more traffic. Parking's getting worse. And we haven't really had a master plan to try and look at the whole situation, and that's one of our sort of criticisms, I guess.
Parking is a bit of it's a bugbear for me, having had two parking tickets this week. But that's that's another story, and nothing particularly. You know, they're just parking on a pay and display and forgetting to move my car was the problem there. Nobody to blame but myself. But if you look around the streets, one of the issues seems to be that you've barely got enough parking for one car per house, and then if houses, I know obviously students aren't necessarily always going to have a car each, but they might, and actually if you have an average family, they might have two cars, and there might not be a garage, and even if there is, it's probably full of stuff, anything but a car.
Absolutely. Well, the City Council's policy on all new developments is only one parking place per dwelling.
Nobody seems to have told the residents of that, though.
Well,
that seems to be the problem.
No, two-car families don't exist, as far as they're concerned, so what do? They park on the street. And round our way, we're completely dominated by people who park all day, Monday to Friday, to go to work or to commute to London.
And are there parking restrictions on that road?
No, there aren't. I mean, the problem for us is that the residence parking scheme, the formal residence parking scheme, is very unpopular, and we don't really want it. But if there's no controls, then it means that our streets are totally parked between sort of 7:30 in the morning and 6 at night, 5 days a week, which is not illegal, but it's an issue.
Not very convenient.
It's an issue for our residents, kind of put it that way.
So what do you think? We know the council today has said, talking about the A14 development, and they've basically said, well, we don't really fancy chipping into this, thank you very much. We're going to concentrate on the city. And part of their idea is, as they see it, to alleviate some of the pressure, if the road's better, people think it may bring even more traffic into Cambridge. And so what the City Council seems to want to do is to come up with schemes to make it easier for people to use public transport or bicycles. And that seems like a pretty good idea to me.
I totally agree. I mean, I think there's no doubt at all that we can improve the facilities for cyclists, and certainly public transport needs has improved a great deal. I mean, the park and rides and things like that have made a significant difference, but it has to go a great deal further. I don't think it's the City Council's job to chip into the A14. It's a national network road, and that should be a job of government. I mean, the problem is they're not going to do it.
It's government who's doing the asking, of course, not just Cambridge City Council, but other councils, of course, along the route.
They're handing out their begging bowl, and at the same time they're cutting council money going to councils from centre government by about 30%, which seems to me a bit crazy.
If we look at Cambridge as a whole, are things tilting perhaps too much in favour of business? We don't have to discourage business, of course, but maybe sometimes the views and the needs of the residents aren't necessarily taken into account.
I think, Julian, a lot of my colleagues would absolutely agree with you. I don't actually agree with you. On a personal basis, I think Cambridge is just a fantastic place, and I'm really proud to be a resident here. I think, you know, we're a city of 125,000 people. We're, 300,000 if we include South Cams. That's half of 1% of the UK population. Yet we have two universities, one of which, by any survey you care to look at, is in one of the top five of the world. We have a hospital which is, by most accounts, in the top five in the UK. Vince Cable the other day said we are the premier cluster of high-tech businesses in the UK. Many other things, museums, theatre, blah, 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 historic centre, etc. For a city our size, that is phenomenal. And I think that we have to continue to welcome new organisations like the AstraZenecas of the world. We've got two FTSE 100 companies in a city this size. I mean, that is just, again, amazing. But we need to find ways of improving the infrastructure. I mean, it has been improved, in fairness. The park and rides I've mentioned, the guided bus, despite all the hoo-ha about it, is clearly an investment. The new Science Park station's an investment. But we have to go far, far, far further, I think, because it's all about balancing this economic success with the quality of life.
Do you largely support, I think, what's generally known as the local plan for Cambridge?
Well, the local plan is being redone at the moment, and quite rightly so, because it's going to determine planning applications over the next 20 years. And actually, FECRA has been playing, that's the Federation, has been playing, I think, quite an important role, working with the City Council planners. We've held two conferences for our members, with 70 or so people attending.
Because I guess this is the thing, actually, representing the various residents' associations. They may be, I think you said, I forget the number now, 70 or so, you said at the
90 or so.
90, I'm sorry, I've just reduced you by 20 members. you said at the beginning about the number of members that you have, but of course, within those organisations, there will presumably be a number of people. One has a half dozen. It very soon adds up.
Yeah, that's right. They're varied, the associations. Some of them are effectively one-man band. Mm. But others, like my own, we've got about 80 or 90 people there, of whom maybe 20 or 30 are sort of active, if you like. So by coming through the chairs and the secretaries, they can get to their members, and we therefore can get messages out and communications out to quite a number of people in the city.
Have you got some success stories that maybe you could tell us about as we work over the last couple of years?
Well, I think at a sort of general level, I believe that we have convinced the senior councillors and the senior officers, particularly in the planning department, that it is actually better to talk with us than at us. And I think they take us reasonably seriously now, and are happy to listen to what we have to say. So I think there's been something of a change of attitude, and then we're not just... residents aren't just viewed as NIMBYs who are opposed to...
I guess this is always the danger, isn't
it?
That people think, oh, here's a bunch of people, they're going to say no to absolutely everything.
Yeah, and of course... what you want to do is to keep the quality of life in your little area, and that, of course, tends to be change-resistant, I'm afraid.
Yeah, which is like, you know, that's all in favour of building, so why don't you build it over that part of the city instead of in ours?
Not in my patch, of course.
Yeah.
But in fairness, there are quite a number of applications which we find we are broadly supporting, so it's not all negative by any means. I think what we've found is if we can get in early... we can actually influence the developers' views on some occasions, by no means always. I give an illustration near to where I live on what is the Mark, the old Tim Brinson site on Hills Road Bridge. It got rejected a couple of times, and the marshals who owned the site and the developer sat down with the three local residents' associations and said, well, what are your problems? And we listed a number. And in fairness, we don't totally agree with what they're doing, but they did respond to a number of the points we made. That was because they hadn't yet firmed their plans up. And the problem is, once you put a planning application in, it's sort of kind of set in stone, and so you're into confrontation to change it.
So what quite often happens here, you know, a bit of information from the council will come forward, or we're having this consultation. That's the time, is it, to stand up and start shouting, or have you somehow got to even get in before the consultation makes its move?
If you possibly can, you've got to get in before that, which is not easy because you don't necessarily know.
But
about
the council, I think, does sometimes publish things like planning, don't they?
Yes.
On their website, if you keep an eagle eye on it, you can find out.
Right, that's right. But another example in West Chesterton is the community hall, which has been built out of the money from all the developments on St Andrew's Road. The residents' association there got in very early and were able to actually change and shape, if you like, what the hall was going to be and what it was going to do and how it was going to be managed. So it's now actually locally run. And I suspect if they'd not been around, it would have been handled very differently.
I guess, Roger, most of the residents' associations who are around Cambridge will know of your existence, but if they don't, perhaps this is the first time they've heard about you. How will they get in touch to join?
The best thing is either to contact me, which is on Cambridge 522973, or to email us, and we're at an email which is fecra, that's FECRA mailings@gmail.com.
Okay, that's very good. Really interesting, Roger. Thank you very much for coming into Cambridge 105 tonight.
Thank you for asking me.
My pleasure. It's Roger Crabtree, the Secretary of the Federation of Cambridge Residents Associations.